When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello. Welcome to the Snooker Scene podcast. I'm Dave Hendon. It won't have escaped your notice. The World Championship's on. And what a first few days we've had. And there's going to be two podcasts. One today, one on Thursday. Just catching up with what's been happening, people's views. We're all busy people. So there'll be about half an hour each. We'll try not to get in your way too much because there's a lot of snooker to watch. But the first round's been fascinating. The story of the first round undoubtedly has been, you know, the seeds losing. I think we all thought the qualifiers were particularly strong this year. Obviously, the lowest ranked qualifier, 45. So 32 players at the Crucible inside the world's top 45. And obviously, the tone was set on the first night when Luca Bissell, the defending champ, went out. About other upsets, the biggest, I guess, Mark Selby so far, losing to Joe O'Connor. In terms of my predictions, some have been spot on, some have been way off, which is basically the same as every year. But I think it bears out what I've thought for a while, which is that the first round of the World Championship is arguably the best, because you see lots of different faces, a big turnover of matches, and lots of incident. And you see the sort of plucky outsiders, and you see the big names, and you see the nerves at the Crucible, of course. I mean, the black shirt Bingham missed. I know he won the match in the end, but last round of the session against Gary Wilson, I was talking to Fergal O'Brien about that, and he said, you just wouldn't miss that anywhere else. That is that venue. And we'll come on, probably in the next podcast, I'll talk about all the garbage that's been talked about, the venue. I mean, does any other sport do this navel-gazing throughout its biggest event every year? We're here again. It's our shop window for snooker, so let's spend most of our time running down a venue that means so much to so many people who actually pay their money to go there. But we'll come to that, as I say, in the next episode, because in this episode, we've still got some feedback about the qualifiers, which seem a long time ago now. We've had some emails on that and various other things, so let's get stuck in. My theory, by the way, on why so many seeds are losing, it's quite straightforward. I mean, people say, well, it's the qualifiers have played right before. Well, that might be a factor, but last year only four seeds got beat, so it was exactly the same format. It's been the same for a while. I think, really, the top players have underperformed this year, and so they weren't in great form anyway. I mean, Mark Selby was struggling. Neil Robertson isn't even there. You know, who have been the players of the season? Ronnie O'Sullivan, Judd Trump, Mark Allen have been the multiple winners. Obviously, they're the established winners who've carried on winning. Gary Wilson has become a winner, and Zhang Ander as well, but they've been knocked out. So I think that's it, really. I think, in general, you know, it's been quite a sort of small group of players have been winning anyway. Anyway, let's go. Let's say emails about the qualifiers. Now, I'll just read them all out and then comment at the end. Steve Hooley, he says, I thought I'd tell you about my visit to the EIS at Sheffield to watch the first session of Judgment Day Part 2. I arrived at the venue at 10 a.m, an hour before play started, and just managed to get a parking space. There was already a big queue to get into the venue, but that is an encouraging sign for snooker in general. I got a seat so that I could watch both the Ryan Day Scott Donaldson match and the Neil Robertson Jamie Jones match. Great snooker on display, especially Ryan and Scott, as Ryan knocked in a century, followed immediately by Scott doing the same. After the first four frames, I nipped out for a comfort break, as the seating wasn't the most comfortable. The food and drink options were quite limited and not well catered for, as there was a big queue with only one person serving. When I went back into the arena, I got a seat to watch Hossein Vafai against Yang Jun. Hossein had been struggling, but went on a rampage. As I'll just... The little box has opened on the computer for no reason. Excuse me. We'll edit this out later. Went on the rampage. To produce four consecutive 60-plus breaks, ending the session leading 5-4. I'm now going to expand banal meetings with snooker players to banal meetings with snooker referees. I passed Olivia Martil in the venue and caught his eye, then nodded my head, combined with a flick up of my eyebrows. Olivier reciprocated. Job done, not a word spoken, but communication was established. I had a great day, and all for the entry price of £12. Glad you enjoyed it, Steve. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think one legitimate criticism of the Crucible actually is the price, ticket pricing. But the qualifiers, £12 for a day, that's, it works out about £1 an hour. With so much action to watch, so I'm glad you enjoyed it. Richie Turner, he says it's about 8:30 on the final judgment day. I must say this has been probably the best 2 days of snooker I've watched since I started watching snooker as a kid in the late 70s. How about that? The way you switch coverage from table to table makes it so exciting. The close finishes and, of course, what's ultimately at stake make for thrilling viewing. The 5 o'clock evening start also helps to keep the crowds there until the end. Anyway, there's still four or five matches at about eight each, so I'm going to enjoy the next hour or so. Well done to you, Rob and Ken, for a brilliant job describing the drama. Fabulous entertainment all round. Can't wait until next year. I should explain to those who don't know that this is Richie there is talking. Thank you for the email. He's talking about the Judgment Day that World Snooker Tour put on their YouTube and Facebook channels. You can watch it on Discovery Plus and Matchroom Live as well. And we go around all the tables. I was commentating with Ken Doherty. Rob Walker was presenting. So that was last week. Dave Priest, pulling the plug whilst the last match is on is disgraceful. Shocking. Any explanation on behalf of the moron who decided, please? Great podcast, love it. Someone who calls himself Snooker Mentalist says, long-time listener and first-time emailer. It's in an Alpha Bonzi style, here are my 3 points. Number one, on the YouTube coverage, I think you, Ken and Rob make a very good team. I was particularly interested in your lunch tea options, although I was very surprised Rob had a curry before 6 o'clock. Well, that was kind of the time that they sent the food out, but anyway, it's a small issue. Two, I cannot wait for Saturday. Obviously, this was sent last week. And three, hopefully as the last 2 points were positive, this is a negative one. As I said, we super enjoyed the YouTube coverage of the qualifiers. I've had it on the main screen in the house. And as he gets home from school, my 13-year-old son has watched it with me. He's gained a particular liking to Matt Selt. And so I said he could stay up to watch to see if he qualifies. I cannot believe the match got cut off. Obviously, it was not your decision to cut off. After he left on YouTube, I thought maybe I could purchase Matchroom to continue watching, but I rang a friend with Matchroom, and he said the same coverage as you were doing on YouTube had stopped too. To me, it's like leaving the World Cup final just as they're about to go to penalties. All the best. Hope to shout goodbye-bye to you next week. Donald, I really enjoyed the Judgment Day coverage, but was very disappointed. It's like point of view all of a sudden, isn't it? I really enjoyed the Judgment Day coverage, but was very disappointed that the plug was pulled before matches completed in both the afternoon and evening sessions. In the afternoon session, the final frame of a match involving two Chinese players wasn't shown, and the evening session coverage of the match between Selt and O'Connor stopped with a score at 9-8. In the latter case, it wasn't even particularly late when the plug was pulled, not even 11:30. Frankly, I thought it was pretty amateurish that we weren't able to see the conclusion of such a high-profile match. By way of contrast, night matches in the Australian Open tennis often conclude in the very early hours of the morning, after 3 a.m. on some occasions. Can you imagine the tennis broadcaster deciding to wrap it up midway through the fifth set? No, neither can I, because this doesn't happen in big-time sports. I'm not directing this complaint at you personally. Overall, the coverage was excellent, but the fact it was terminated before all the matches had completed was frankly pretty amateurish. Bonus complaint, I found the constant remarks about Dominic Dell's personal life, mostly from Ken and Rob, to be a bit crass. I hope you have a great Crucible 2024. Brian McGovern, just a quick email to let you know how much I enjoy Judgment Day, to thank you, Ken and Rob, for the excellent coverage. While I was disappointed the way coverage had to end during the O'Connor-Selt match, I know this was a decision that was out of your hands. I'm hoping you didn't get too much grief over it. Anyway, on a lighter note, I'll be heading to my first live snooker event at the Northern Ireland Open, and I can't wait. As I'm visually impaired, it will be interesting to see how I get on. Looking forward to it nonetheless, and hopefully our paths will cross. Ben writes, just a quick thank you to all those involved in Judgment Day. What an amazing service for the snooker fan to see the narrative of the day. Rob, Ken and yourself combined to make a superb team and really tell the story of the day. I know you're modest about your own contribution, but your commentary was superb, informative and humorous. Ken is a cracking pundit who gets better every time I listen to him. His knowledge of the game and understanding the shot to play is incredible. And what more can be said about the enthusiasm and passion of Rob? Snooker really couldn't ask for anyone better to promote and bring the positive elements of the game to the public domain. Watching the draw, I thought having Mark Allen in the studio, like Sean Murphy last year, really adds some gravitas to the whole thing. It shows how accessible the players are, even 2 days before the showpiece event of the season. Snooker really is blessed to have such role models at the top of the sport. Appreciate I've missed the immediate reaction podcast, but if I could choose just one match to watch, I think I'd go for Ding v. Lazowski. Good to see you had your finger on the pulse when you predicted Brussel v. Gilbert would be 10-9. Thank you for your continued dedication to the game and bringing it to all of us that love snooker. Best wishes and enjoy the World Championship. Aidan writes, hope this email finds you well. Happy Crucible Eve to you. I'm sending this on Thursday before it starts. I'll keep the email shorter than the last one I sent. I just wanted to ask two questions. Even without Neil Robertson, is this the strongest quality field of 32 we've ever had at the Crucible? Feels to me like there's more strength in depth than ever before. Well, just on that, I think that the sort of the results we've seen in the first round probably back that up. And Aidan continues, I wanted to compliment you and the team on a truly brilliant Judgment Day broadcast over the past few days. I certainly won't knock you or WST for the broadcast ending early, as I'm certain it has nothing to do with you. It was truly one of the most fantastic days of snooker I've ever seen. The drama on the last day and so many close matches absolutely helped make it feel even more of a significant occasion. And you, Rob and Ken's incredible broadcasting skill to keep across all the matches happening at the same time and portraying it all back to the viewer in an almost NFL red zone style broadcast was truly fantastic viewing. But question on this, as well as making them open to people to attend, are there any plans by WST to have this style of broadcast at any other tournaments outside of the Worlds and UK Championship in the future? I absolutely realise it wouldn't make sense to do it at every tournament and the resources aren't there for that, but was wondering, could it be done at other some selected tournaments like the British Open, German Masters or the bigger Chinese tournaments? It would certainly make the tournament in question seem like a bigger event to the viewer and help to grow these tournaments in that respect compared to a commentary-less stream that we have for the qualifiers in most tournaments. Thanks, Dave. Love the podcast. Enjoy the next few weeks in Sheffield and maybe I'll get lucky and see you there on one of the days I'm there later in the tournament. Liam writes, I don't want to complain too much as overall the coverage of the qualifiers is unreal and Judgment Day is the best, but how has it come about to pull the Joe O'Connor Matt Self finale? Could you go into some more detail about why? Usually channels do this with scheduling conflicts, but this can't be the case here, can it? Was everyone only down to work certain hours which it went over? I was as transfixed by that as I have been by any snooker in a long time, and it was such a fitting conclusion to a great mini tournament in itself. It almost felt like being ripped away from a major final 2 frames from the end. I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed. Jokes aside, you've done an amazing job commentating over the qualifiers. It was great, and now I'm looking very much forward to the Crucible. So we've had a lot of emails there about the Judgment Day coverage. It's true that the stream stopped at about 10:30. I'll explain what happened. Firstly, I'm very disappointed with some of the comments that have been made, not by snooker fans who are entitled to, you know, they sat watching, they're entitled to say whatever they want, but people within the game have said things about this that are frankly just not true. The first thing to say is I've heard it said that Discovery Plus pulled the stream. They didn't. It was a World Snooker Tour production. The decision was made by World Snooker Tour, and I'll explain exactly what happened because unlike most people who commented on this, I was actually there. Midway between the two sessions on the last day, we were told that our coverage would end at about 10:30 unless there was a match in the decider. And the reason for that is very simple. It's a very small crew. There was a reference there to the Australian Open Tennis. Well, hundreds of people work on the technical team for that, and they rotate the team throughout the day. It's not the same people all day. It's a crew of about 8 people who provide that coverage. It's an incredible operation. I'm speaking as someone who's brought in to commentate, but I'm talking about the technical operation. To get across all of that, you know, and they are there all day. They were there at 8 o'clock in the morning setting up, checking things, making sure it was all ready to go at 11. And even the break between sessions, about 90 minutes. But even through that, they're still working hard on just checking stuff, editing stuff. It's a constant operation. And the reason the decision was made to stop at 10:30 is just because it's a bloody long day. Remember, the final session started at 5 o'clock, okay? And they've got to de-rig all the equipment at the end. They were working on boxing at the weekend, the same people. They've been there since 8 o'clock in the morning. It's just a long day. And if it had been 9 each, obviously you stay to the end. But the fact is, the match we were on in the end, because it did come off at 9:08, the frame, when we left it, had been going 55 minutes and was nowhere near the end. It ran for another 55. And there could have been a decider, which you've got to think would probably have been about an hour long. So you're talking 1 in the morning from a 5 o'clock start. So that's 8 hours on top of all the hours that have already gone on. Now, if it was the BBC or ITV, they'd have a separate team, but it wasn't. It was a small team, and the decision was made for the right reasons. The mistake that was made, and World Snooker have accepted this, is that they, in the sort of fog of, you know, what was happening, misunderstood. They thought that that match was on Discovery Plus, but Discovery Plus only had tables 1 to 4. I think it was on table 7. So actually, it wasn't going out. Now, had they realised that it wasn't going out, I think they would have just kept the stream up and you could have watched it. So that was a mistake that was made, but I'm certainly not going to criticise them. You know, there's been calls for people to be sacked. There's reference to someone being a moron there. The person who ran that operation for World Snooker, he's not a moron. He's very smart and he's a kind person and he was just looking after the crew. I understand snooker fans wanting to watch that, the end of that match. I would have stayed personally because I would have wanted to watch it as well. But I thought the work ethic of the people on that production was unbelievable, actually. You're just all day, constant work, you know, switching between tables and making sure the whole operation worked. I remember 30 years ago when Alex Higgins last qualified for the Crucible, and I was obviously interested to know if he was going to get through or not. Obviously, unless you went to the venue, there was basically no way of finding out. I found out Alex Higgins had qualified for the Crucible in the next day's evening paper. It wasn't even in time for the morning paper. I didn't have CPAPs at home. So the only way I could find out was getting the evening paper at about 5 o'clock. That's how I found out who'd qualified for the Crucible that year. Now you can watch it live, free, on YouTube and Facebook. And if the takeaway from the event is, oh, we didn't get to see the last hour, rather than what a great service. Because they're not making money on this. They're providing it for free. And I was very proud to be part of it. I thought it was a great service. Yes, there was an error made. A stream of that match should have been kept up. I don't disagree with that. But the fact is, they did a great job. And the numbers bear that out, because it was actually, we got the figures back. They're incredible. They were great last year, but in terms of total views this year, it was up 128%. 128% up, which shows the interest in it. The Neil Robertson match, certainly, there was loads of interest in that. Social views over 1 million. It was an amazing success, and as I say, that's the reason. You know, if there was a team of 40 people there, they could have carried on, but there was 8 people who ran that whole thing, and those 8 people did a great job, and that's the reason. People have asked what it was. It was World Snooker Tour made the decision for the right reasons. If it pissed people off, sorry, but it was a great service, and let's hope they do it again, because there was a lot of vitriol. I thought it was very distasteful, and as I say, people in the game having a go, you know, I just found quite annoying, actually. But anyway, that's the answer to the question that's been asked. Now, Brian O'Grady, he's from Stockholm, but he was actually at the qualifiers. He said, just spent a wonderful few days watching the last 3 days of the qualifiers. Would love to share some thoughts. As a background, I'd only seen pro play sessions on the Q Tour before here in Sweden. So I'd seen people like Michael Holt, Peter Lyons, Liam Davies, etc. actually participated in the Q Tour last fall. What was I thinking? You gloss over your own performance there, Brian, but that's fine. What amazing value it is. £12 for an entire day of top quality dramatic snooker. You can sit comfortably with Neil Robertson in front of you, Hussein Vafai playing to your right, and then nip off during the break to watch Nopon or Dave Gilbert. How there is such little attendance during the early days is beyond me. I'll be back next year, no question. What a difference being there in person is. It's like listening to the record and being at the concert, front row. No comparison with watching on the telly. You see the facial expressions as they walk back to their chair following a bad shot. I could nearly feel the nervousness of Jamie Jones as he took the first shot following an opening error from Robertson. Fantastic experience. You also get to experience the personalities of the players in a way not possible through the TV screen. Some completely ignore the audience, which I understand. Others make contact and openly share their feelings in a wonderful way. I won't mention the players that I had negative feelings about. Let me say that Matthew Stevens is a delight, and you really felt like you were there with him. Also, man, what a cool customer Joe O'Connor is, especially during that last frame against Selt. The highlight of the visit for me was the amazing tussle with Matthew Selt. Selt showed his frustration, as is his way, but you don't see how raw and professional he is towards the ref and the other player. My respect for both rose significantly. It struck me how wonderful it is to have such a low threshold between fan and player. Waiting for the tram back to Sheffield City Centre beside Nopon the day after he made his 147 is like waiting for the bus beside a football player after they scored a hat-trick in the FA Cup. Surreal. Anyway, love the podcast and will be rooting for O'Connor at the Crucible. Well, you'll be happy now, Brian, because, of course, O'Connor's beaten Selby. Thank you, Brian. Yeah, and also, the person who asked, earlier on, do World Snooker have any intention of streaming all of the qualifiers like this? I mean, it's quite an expensive operation, so it's not going to be something. I think the novelty would wear off, obviously, if it was overdone. But I'd certainly think an event like the Saudi event, if they're going to have qualifying for that, I mean, that's supposed to be a major tournament now. That might be an obvious one to do it in. And actually, Q School as well. I mean, why not the final day of Q School going around the four tables? It's a big deal to get on tour. there'll be recognisable players in it, because it's often people who've been on tour before. I mean, it's all budgets, obviously, it's cost money. But I do think, you know, it's a service that works. It's a service that's popular. I think people agree that, you know, it's enjoyable. And it's a way of promoting the game. And, you know, the fact is, people tune in. So, you know, if it's not up to me, and literally nothing to do with me, but that's what I would look at. Maybe Q School, and then maybe the Saudi event, and you know, hopefully it'll continue, you know, in the current form for the UK and the World Championship as well. Now, of course, we're getting, that's the qualifying, we'll get into the actual crucible. First day, Luca Bissell was beaten by Dave Gilbert. I don't like to say that I tipped it 10-9, correct score, but I just have. But anyway, I've had a couple of emails on Brussels' performance and general demeanour. Neil Caesar, not happy. He says, I was very disappointed in the abject surrender of Brussel. As the defending champion, you have to go out on your shield and not give up on a decider with just one snooker required. He has brought dishonour to this great sport. Okay, so that's Neil Caesar. Declan, a little less vitriolic. He says, on watching the Brussel-Gilbert match, I was struck by the character of competition that makes the Crucible so special. I thought, if that was another competition, Bissell may have carried the match. But being the Crucible, your opponent when down is never out. Because the competition is so important to each player, they'll keep fighting if you give them a glimmer of hope, which Bissell gave to Gilbert. I think that's why the Crucible is known for its dramatic comebacks, because when defeat looks imminent, if the likely winner of the match shows any faltering, the hopeful state of mind of the nearly defeated opponent jumps into life, and they immediately, for dear life, start clawing their way back into the match. Each player has heroic energy in his heart in this tournament. A mere chink in the armour of the dominant player can so quickly become a gaping hole. The belief of the underdog is never stronger, and the belief of the dominant player never more vulnerable. I had to respect how Brussel exited the tournament this year. He said how he was looking forward to a year of not being world champion, as he doesn't like the attention. The way he phrased that suggests he meant what he said. He also asked a great question about the psychology of sport. When pointing out that snooker's only a game, he philosophically wondered, why are we sad when we lose, and why are we happy when we win? I think he's lived out this question quite impressively, as he never struck me as altogether overexcited when he won, and he didn't seem too unhappy in defeat either. When he conceded frame and matched to Dave Gilbert, needing only one snooker, to the sigh of disappointment from the crowd and a gasp from John Verger in commentary. Regarding his reaction as a victor and loser, Brussel has been his own man from this time last year to this time this year, and he appears to have stepped from the stage with relief and grace. I salute that. Well, thank you, Declan. So mixed opinions there. I mean, the question, why are we sad when we lose and happy when we win? It's not just a game, is it? It's your whole life, effectively, as a sportsman, because it's what you earn money from, and it does define your emotions. And in a way, and we'll get on to Mark Selby maybe later, but in a way, that's the problem for Mark, is that he's sort of lost the enjoyment of playing. It has become about results, and if he's not playing well and he's not winning, he's very disappointed, very down. He wasn't well, Luca. That was apparent. He pulled out the World Snooker Tour podcast the night before. But also, I think the attention... Yeah, not everyone's comfortable in it. And Dave Gilbert made a strange comment. He said, oh, World Snooker missed an opportunity. Luca should be the focus of every tournament. Well, he didn't play in half the tournaments. I mean, he literally pulled out of tournaments. He didn't qualify for the player series. So it's hard to be the focus of attention for the Tour Championship if you're not in the Tour Championship. But also, Luca himself said he doesn't actually like the attention. Not everyone likes being the poster boy. I mean, the fact is, he's played his matches on the main table, and he has been, you know, they've done stuff with him. They went to Belgium and did stuff with him. So I don't agree that he hasn't had enough attention. But you only really get it if you're doing the business on the table. And let's be honest, he hasn't this season. He's been in two big invitation finals. But overall, it wasn't a season where he got great results. And he exited on day one of the World Championship. And there may be some relief there for him. He can get away from it all, get his head together, come back next season and start challenging for tournaments again as a former world champion, with the respect that rightly carries, but not the focus of being the current world champion, where your results are analysed and scrutinised, and people on podcasts like this, people like me, chime in with comments about you. It can't be easy being, you know, it's not easy being a prominent sports person. You get the rewards financially and otherwise, but there are a lot of kind of sort of mental challenges that go with it. And obviously Brussel had won tournaments before, but there's nothing like being world champion and going back to the Crucible. I mean, it looked like he was going to win at one point. He was 9-6 up, but, you know, he played a very open game. And Dave Gilbert, credit to him, he came back well, I thought. But anyway, listen, Luca's a nice lad, and look forward to seeing him next season. Now, Jonas, a very direct question here from Jonas. Has there ever been a time where it comes to time to seek the World Championship and the reigning champion has been outside the top 16? Yeah, is the answer. 2006. In those days, your world ranking applied for the whole season. Now, Sean Murphy won it in 2005, but he didn't get enough points to be in the top 16. So Ian McCulloch was number 16 in the world. But Ian got shoved down to 17 because obviously the world champion is always going to be seeding number one. So he had to go to the qualifiers, which obviously was... And that was the case all season. I mean, he did play in the Masters as a wild card, but very unlucky, having worked so hard to get in the top 16, that scenario happened. Less likely now, because the points are so top-heavy now. I mean, the half a million. I don't think it's possible now to not be in the top 16. But back in the day, it did happen. Now, we'll end this one. As I said, we're back on Thursday with the remaining emails. So if yours hasn't been read out yet, it will be. But we're back on Thursday. But we'll finish with David. He says, just wondering if you can think of an example where a snooker player has warned about potential retirement and then actually retired. Well, we've had a lot of players, of course, saying they're going to walk away and they're going to retire and I'm going to do something else. It's easy to say that, isn't it? It's less easy to do it. Mark Selby, though, is a different case, I think. It's not rash in his case. He's clearly got problems. You can see it in him. He doesn't look happy. We know that he struggled with mental health and we know that he sought help. And he says he's going to speak to Vicky, his wife, in the summer and talk about the future. Now, and that Mark Williams did the same back in 2017. He was sort of going nowhere. He felt he hadn't qualified for the World Championship. And he sat down with his wife, Joanne, and she suggested a change of emphasis in his game. Speak to Lee Walker, who was working with Steve Feeney at Sightright, and, you know, think about playing the game or looking at the game in a different way. And that paid dividends. He was world champion the following year and still playing a great game, of course. So it may be actually something like that. I'm not saying Sightright, but something could change in that way that would give Mark Selby a different emphasis. It may just be he needs a break. The circuit can become a bit of a grind. You know, it can be long, you know, travelling away from home, quite lonely at times. It is very mentally demanding. Snooker players have my respect because it is a tough sport mentally. You know, you're out there on your own. You're actually on your own for long periods, which is not always healthy. And I hope that Mark has a good summer and comes back. You know, he's still number 5 in the world at the moment. Where the ranking list will go after this, who knows. But he's still got a lot to contribute if he can find enjoyment. But the question was, do I know of players who retired? Terry Griffiths did. Back in 1996, he dropped out the top 16. And he said he would not play again, apart from in the following year's World Championship, because again, the rankings held for the whole year. So he would enter the World Qualifier, see if he could play one last time at the Crucible. He'd beat Alfie Burden. I think he'd beat Alfie Burden. Then Mark Williams. Mark Williams beat him 10-9 on the black in the first round. So Terry hadn't played for a year and he still nearly beat someone who was becoming a top player at that point. But he did retire. He went on and became head of the WPBC coaching scheme. But it's very rare. When people say it, I mean, Ryan Day said it last year, you know, it was not a player you would think would say it. But I do cut them some slack, these players, because, you know, it can get you down. But then I think you sort of go away from the tournament environment and the bubble that is the World Championship, but certainly at the Crucible, and you sort of think, actually, this is in my blood and I love it and I'm going to come back. Many of players left the Crucible sort of telling us he won't be back, and they kind of always are. Hope that answers the question. So that's it for this first part. It's been a very good tournament so far. It's not always, you know, you can't expect it to be the highest standard all the time, but the excitement level's been high. And, you know, we've still, at time of recording, got the likes of Ronnie O'Sullivan and John Higgins to come. So looking forward to those matches. Just two other podcasts to talk about. The WPBC podcast that Michael McMullen presents. It's a history podcast, so it's about things from years gone by. And this week, Tony Knowles and John Skilbeck, who wrote Goody Two Shoes about the 1982 World Championship, discussed that tournament. I was on with Joe Perry talking about the 1999 Stephen Hendry seventh title, and Phil Yates and Nigel Bond have been on talking about the 1996 British Open. I don't think it's a spoiler alert to say that I know that Steve Davis and Joe Johnson are going to do one about their finals as well. So, it's a nice product, and Matt Hewitt there at the WPBSA oversees that. So do give that a listen. But speaking of podcasts, Alan McManus, he's making us all look lazy, because Alan, when he was on the predictions podcast, with myself, Neil, and Phil Yates. He said, I'm going to launch my own podcast. I'm going to do it daily from the Crucible every morning. And we all sort of thought, okay, Alan, yes, whatever. Well, of course, knowing Alan, you know, when he starts something, he's going to see it through. And he has been doing it. It's called the Snooker Breakfast. And it's a good listen. As you'd imagine, Alan gives his thoughts, gives analysis of what's been happening, little tidbits from behind the scenes. It's on Spotify at the moment. I know he's trying to get it on Apple Podcasts. It takes a few episodes for them to accept it. I didn't know they were so discerning about podcasts, bearing in mind some of the ones you can listen to on there. But anyway, he's doing that, and hopefully if you're an Apple subscriber, it will appear on there in due course. But it is on Spotify, so do give it a listen and support Alan, because he's one of the great voices and one of the great judges of the sport, let's be honest, and always interested to hear what he's got to say. But that's it. A half an hour is just coming to a conclusion, whatever that means. And thanks for listening, and there'll be plenty more to discuss. Keep the emails coming in, snookerscenepodcast@mail.com. That's snookerscenepodcast@mail.com. The World Championship very much underway, and we look forward to following more twists and turns in the coming days. But for now, as we always say, it's goodbye-bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.